This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Greetings, everyone. Thank you for joining our show here with Women in Fire and the Fire Engineering Blog Radio. We're happy to have a few guests joining tonight that will be joining us as we are co-located with our leadership conference in Indianapolis, co-located with FDIC, that is. And I'm happy to have our first guest joining, Ms. Terry Reed. And Terry, if you could give us a little bit of an introduction about yourself and your background, that would be amazing.
Absolutely. Well, good evening. My name is Terry Reed. I am an EMS lieutenant with the Baltimore County Fire Department. Between combination of volunteer and career, I have 25 years of service. And one of my goals is to really reach out about recruitment, retention, and retaining our members in the fire service. So thank you, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And again, my name is Amy Hannafin. I'm the president with Women in Fire, and we're happy to get to talk with a few of our guests that will be presenters and probably some of our Women in Fire members as well throughout the next hour. So Terry, thank you again for joining. And you will actually be teaching recruitment and retention in today's fire service upcoming at our one-day leadership conference on April 25th. Can you give us a little bit of background about that class and what attendees might be able to expect?
Well, the class is for personnel to just help better relate to the career and volunteer services nowadays. As you see that we're all together having struggles with keeping members, whether it's career or volunteer. And I think we need to more understand, you know, the barriers and talk about the at-risk populations we face, and we need to diagnose some strategies and engage more into the population of, you know, the communities that we serve. We need to also focus on where are we with recruitment and retention? How better can we be? What tactics and strategies, who in the community can we reach out to, whether it's going to churches, whether it's being out in public communities events, and more or less getting into our schools, not just the middle school or high schools. We need to, our elementary children are also intrigued. But once we start to know that relationship on how to relate to even current members in the fire service or our upcoming members, they're called our Generation Y. Be willing to answer those questions. Don't just look at it as they're asking why. More or less, they're trying to get an understanding and a thought process of what direction they need to go, how they need to go. And it's up to us, either us or our seasoned members, to lead these individuals in the right direction. I think that's really, really important.
That sounds like some great information. And I understand that you might even dive into statistics a bit. Do you feel like there are some gaps still with where recruitment has maybe been?
We do have
doing
some.
Well, or not doing well in the fire service?
Well, I think we can always work to do better. That should always be our ultimate goal. And we do have some gaps. Our numbers, we'll use women, for instance, are increasing, but then we'll have a staggering point that we just stay pretty balanced, and we need to figure out a way how to enhance that knowledge. I always look at diversity and inclusion, just learning how to accept and giving people that opportunity. Sit back, learn, understand, listen to people's thought processes too, for us to move forward, to get people well-rounded, to get into a wonderful career in the fire and EMS services, and just enjoy what you do. Where can you go that a lot of times you don't have to have a college degree, because they'll assist you with getting that. And sometimes you have to talk about what are the perks, and that will enlighten some people to say, hey, but yeah, we're going to have some statistics and some ways that we can enhance our numbers. So I'm very, very excited for that as well.
Thank you. I think one other point that you touched on a bit that kind of piqued my interest, at least, is talking about how there are generational differences. Do you find that departments today, or even the fire service today, is having to kind of sort up what the differences are in being able to recruit with the different generations coming up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things in the fire service, change is difficult. We're used to doing things a certain way. Well, now we have to branch off from that a little bit to, we can do things a certain way, but it's how you get into that mind of individuals to let them know that there are benefits for doing what we've done. As time goes on in life, we have to shift. And it doesn't mean shift to change things 100% differently, but what is the best way for that learner to absorb that information and deliver it to our community or the members or citizens that they're serving? So that's really, really important.
Thank you. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it. I know that your class has been a hit the few times that we've had it before, and I know that our audience will be excited to have you. So one other thing I wanted to talk about with you is your experience at Women in Fire conferences. And I know you've been a longtime supporter, and we certainly appreciate that of you. Can you tell us what it's like for those maybe who haven't been to a Women in Fire conference before?
Well, it's definitely a life-changing experience being at a Women in Fire conference. You get to network with so many different people. You actually get to sit with the executive board like yourself, and we get to have that communication. The training classes are astronomical. I mean, it is absolutely fabulous to be able to sit in a classroom, get that lecture or that enhancement in my life that I need, so I can bring that back home so that I can start delivering that same information to the people that weren't able to join. Going out on the compounds, having like the Rachels and the Kims, everybody is just all in cohesive together to keep us motivated, keep us strong, keep everything positive, for all of us to just come together. And unfortunately, I wish it wasn't such a short time, because I love it every single minute. I love it. But I thank you for allowing me to be a part of Women in Fire, allow me to contribute, and I will always be a supporter. And if there's anything that I can do, or anyone wants to reach out to me for additional information, I know some people from my department are now joining, and they're really, really excited. So I'm looking forward to them coming to our upcoming conference in September in Orlando, Florida.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate it. And we're looking forward to having you as a presenter at our leadership conference on April 25th there in Indianapolis again. And hopefully we'll have a few people that would be interested in hearing about recruitment and retention. And I know that you'll have some attendees who certainly appreciate the takeaways.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you.
All right. So our next guest I would like to bring in is Lisa Burton, and Lisa is going to be teaching a class called Five Things to Do Before the First 5 Minutes. Lisa, how are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
Great, thank you for joining. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited to hear more about your class. If you could introduce yourself and give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Well, my name is Lisa Burton. I've been on the fire service for going on 12 years now. And about 5 years ago, I made a change in my careers and went into emergency management and management of fire and emergency services. So I've combined my firefighting career with my emergency management career for my paid job. And that's where I noticed that there's a lot of people trying to do a lot of things with very few resources, small staffs, small amounts of equipment, that sort of thing.
Great, thank you. And I have to say, I was very intrigued reading through the description of your class and just learning more about, you know, what, of course, you're going to be presenting. Could you give us some background on your class and what attendees can expect?
So the approach of the class is that I was hoping to share the things that I've realized in the job that I've done since I changed careers, to see that there's a lot of resources that people might not recognize yet. And there's a lot of ways to get together ahead of any types of calls that you might have within your community, to really build those teams ahead of time. And we know that when we work together as crews on the fire service, we work better. Or when you see a small crew that works together all the time, you see they work better. And this is just an opportunity for entire community members, whether it's emergency planning committees or fire departments or law enforcement. We've got emergency management agency people and Red Cross all working together. And I've seen it come together in certain amount of times where we've had situations where all these people come together and everybody knew each other and we just got the job done. And we see that a lot in the fire service in smaller scale, but the class brings five different ideas together for that to make it better when the call does come in.
That's great. It sounds like a much needed class itself. How do you feel that that has served people who have attended the class or taken the class?
Well, I think it's just a matter of ideas put together in a different way. I think a lot of people recognize that anything that I'm bringing to this class, I'm like, oh, I might have heard of that, or I might have tried that, but maybe not tried it all together and maybe not recognized where those different resources might be. So a lot of times after the fact, you can look back and say, maybe I did sit in on an after action review with the fire department, or maybe I had them come on my campus to do something. And the feedback from that has been twofold. One, people are like, I never even considered doing that before. And we don't have people lead our after action if they're not directly in our department. Or it's amazing that it did come together after all. You know, people try that approach. And I think it's been very well received.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. So Lisa, have you been to FDIC before? I'm assuming you probably have.
I have. This year coming up will be my fourth year. So not as many as some people have been going for literally decades, but I very much enjoyed it. And last year I thought I'm going to come for the week and I'm going to see Women in Fire and make a whole week of it. And that was amazing.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. And I hope that we'll get to spend some more time with you this year. And we're excited to have you as a presenter.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. All right. So our next guest is someone who has been at our conferences before, and I'm very excited to get to connect with again today. And I know that she is excited to get to join us as well. Dina, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited. I'm glad we're on Zoom and I can actually see you guys too.
I know. So. It is great. It's nice to be able to connect. Dina Ali will be presenting in our class. Can you give us a little background about yourself, of course, and then we'll dive into the class.
Yeah. So I've been with the Raleigh Fire Department for 4 years now. I'm a captain. I spent a little time as a police officer. And about 6 years ago, I got involved in the mental health side of things and trying to just help change the way we view mental health and help seeking behaviors within the fire and emergency services.
Thank you. It's certainly a much needed topic, certainly. And we appreciate that you're willing to take that on and look forward to being able to offer that to our attendees. So the class itself you'll be teaching is Addressing Suicide, a Proactive Approach to First Responder Mental Wellness. Can you give us some background on what attendees could expect to glean from that?
So I think as a society, especially in emergency services, the last few years, suicide has become a really hot topic. And a lot of people are more interested in it because we're seeing that no type of person, no group of people are immune from it. I mean, good families, bad families, poor families, rich families, first responders, military, people outside of emergency services. Suicide impacts us all in some way or another. And unfortunately, when somebody dies from suicide, you know, we don't have their side of things. We don't understand exactly what led them to that point. So what happens is the people closest to them wonder what they could have done. And you often hear them, you know, ask themselves, what did I miss? And it's always, you know, the person closest to the deceased that kind of blames themselves for missing something or not noticing the signs. And what I've learned and what we've realized is that that's not the case. And a crazy thing that we know is that there's no effective algorithm to predict suicide. Our ability to predict it today is no better than a coin toss. So with full focus on what did we miss, risk factors, signs, I think we're behind the eight ball. So that's why the class is a proactive approach, because like Desmond Tutu said, you know, we have to quit pulling people out of the water. We have to find out why they're falling in. And that's why it's a proactive approach, is we can't focus on those people who are in that emergency risk. We got to get way ahead of it and find out what's leading them there. I'm really excited about this year because there's been some new data that's come out. And basically, you know, the last decade, we have had best practices, we've had recommendations, a focus on mental health has been a big key to it. And despite all the work that's gone into suicide prevention, the rates have continued to go up. I mean, in the last 20 years, they've gone up over 35%, a lot. So in the last year, there's an idea to shift from what we're doing and recognize that it's not working and take a new approach. So Dr. Craig Bryan, he's a psychologist that was working with the Army. Now he is at the University of Texas. He basically proposed that we kind of not start over, but we change our focus completely. And basically he says, you know, the last 20 years we focused on mental health and individuals. And he recommends that we look at suicide deaths similar to how we looked at traffic crash fatalities. So we quit focusing on at-risk individuals, and we actually did this thing called prevention by design. We changed the roadways, we changed the surroundings and made it safer. So that's why you see traffic circles. You see certain roads that they took away speed bumps and they like it butts out a little bit, and it just kind of forces you to slow down. There's certain roads where you can't turn left. The cars have so much protection in them so that if you are texting or speeding and you get an accident, the chances of you dying is reduced. He says we need to do that same thing, prevention by design, in our communities. So what that means is eliminating bullying, focusing on harassment, understanding, you know, the risks of loneliness. And then another key piece is lethal means. What we know now is suicide intensity comes on really quickly and it can be really short-lived. It ebbs and flows. And if you have the means readily available when you're in that, you know, when you're going through something hard or you're depressed or whatnot, having those means readily available is going to increase your risk of dying by suicide. So that's the focus. So I'm excited this year to kind of share that information, especially with women in fire, because we know, unfortunately, women in the fire service experience loneliness, harassment, depression, and whatnot, sometimes at higher rates. And so to understand that piece of it, and then to bring, you know, what we know about suicide today with this community, maybe what we learn can kind of spread to the entire fire service.
Thank you.
No,
you hit on a lot of really great points. I think, I guess what I appreciate is that you do talk about it in a proactive way, and it's not necessarily just a discussion on here are the rates and the data, and also here are some tools and resources. Do you feel some of those, I know you talk about peer support a bit in some other trainings, do you feel that that is a heavier resource that can help to be a proactive piece?
Yeah, I think my favorite part about peer support is just so absolutely simple. It's just like-minded people supporting others and sharing their experiences and coming together. And a lot of times individually, especially when we're struggling, we don't open up or talk about it because we're all in this little rat race wanting to be the best that we can be and not wanting anybody to know that maybe we're not perfect. But when we come together and we start to realize that we're not alone in our struggles, that everybody has struggle, everybody has their ups and downs. And from that point, we learn what brings people through. And that's what peer support does. A lot of people who are a part of peer support, they've gone through really hard times. And when they got on the other side, they joined and they're able to share their experiences. So that proactive piece is learning, you know, how improving sleep helps, how exercise helps, how talking to a counselor helps, and just how having somebody to share your struggles with makes a big difference.
I know it's been a little bit since we've had you at one of our conferences. We're definitely looking forward to having you again and grateful that you're able to join us. Are you, if you have to think back on Women in Fire conferences, how do you think you would relate that to someone who maybe has never been before, the experience itself?
First and foremost, I want to say how devastated I was that I couldn't make Washington. We had a lot going on and vacation time limited me because the Women in Fire conferences, it's just such a special experience. You know, sometimes when you are a woman in the fire service and you are a go-getter and you're trying to be the best you can be, you have these struggles that you feel that you can't really relate to with other people, maybe within your department. So it's awesome to come to that conference. I remember taking Nozzle Forward and being around like all these people that were just trying to be the best and, you know, learning these skills. And it was just so cool, like being surrounded in that manner. And I made so many friends that like I'm still very well connected to today. And just having those like-minded connections and recognizing that, you know, there's people to lean on. I'm especially excited to have Rachel as a friend because she mountain bikes and lives in Colorado. So it's an amazing way to network. It's an amazing way because we all, I mean, to, you know, not to just stick on the subject that I focus on, but we all have our struggles and we all have our setbacks, and just knowing that we're not alone in them, even if you're not coming to my class, but you're connecting and, you know, you're realizing, wow, you went through that as well. Or wow, you had that hurdle. It's just powerful.
I have to agree. I just think that the community and the atmosphere is something unlike you'd find at most fire conferences. And I know we've been to a couple, so it's nice to have that refreshing atmosphere to look forward to.
Yeah. And the Monday night social is probably one of the coolest parts of it, especially because, you know, a couple of days before FDIC, when it's not so crazy busy, like Bobby Halton, that's the only time anybody can even interact with him because he's like all over the place, but he stops in, talks. A lot of the instructors are there, and it's before people get like stressed out and overwhelmed. Plus the food is really good.
Yes.
And it's free. So that Monday night social is really cool. So I hope that everybody's able to get in town early enough to make the social. Or actually, is it Sunday night?
It's Sunday night, yeah. Sunday, so that'll be, yeah. And we'll be looking forward to that, April 24th. We're actually going to be in a ballroom this year, I believe, at the JW, just to give a little more space for everyone. But the food should be just as fabulous. I know the atmosphere will be great, too.
That's awesome. Yeah, hopefully people, flights will get in early enough so people don't miss it.
Yes, I would agree. Definitely plan ahead for that. Well, Dina, thank you so much. I'm glad you were able to join us. We're looking forward to having you Monday, April 25th at our leadership conference, and we'll see you then.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. All right. Our next guest is going to be Miss Angie Hughes. And Angie, of course, is our former president with Women in Fire and has a class that she'll be presenting at our leadership conference again this year. Angie, I just wanted to say hello and let you give a little background. I'm sure most of our listeners know who you are.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm Angie Hughes. I am retired captain from the Baltimore County Fire Department. I spent 30 years there. And I am, as Amy said, the past president of Women in Fire, and I'm excited to be at FDIC again.
Thank you. And we're excited to have you there. It's always awesome to be able to reconnect. I think the thing that I appreciate most about our conferences is not only being able to meet new people, but also being able to reconnect with those who either have been with the organization for a long time or have served the organization. So looking forward to having you. And it looks like you'll be teaching this year, Diversifying the Workforce, the Diversity and Recruitment in the Fire Service class that you present and have been the last couple of years. Can you give us a little bit of background on that class itself?
Yeah, so I'm excited to come and talk about recruitment and retention, and it'll play a bit off of Lieutenant Reed's class and just go to a different level of the importance of recruitment and retention and the practices that we do. Kind of thinking of a more of a holistic approach to it and not just thinking about quotas. So I hope that it'll be something. I feel like if one person gets something out of it, then I've done my job. So I'm really excited to bring it to the organization and share it and get some feedback and learn from everybody else.
I think that's a very good point, is making it a holistic sense of inclusivity, as you kind of mentioned there. Do you feel like there's a certain audience that this class would appeal to, maybe HR or leadership within fire service organizations?
Sure. So, I mean, education is great for everyone, even if you just take a little nugget away. But definitely, I would think this would be something we'd want to see people in leadership, command staff members, lieutenants, captains. It doesn't matter. It's going to give a better understanding of what exactly the why behind the importance of, you know, that holistic approach.
And from your experience, how important do you think it is that fire departments give some attention to the topic of diversity or to ensuring that they're being inclusive within their organization?
Oh, it's incredibly important. And, you know, we often talk about recruitment, but we forget about retention. So they go hand in hand. And working with Dr. Janke and doing the research with NDRI, we're finding a lot of different things that plays factors in the retention aspect of it. So I think it's really important that people have a better understanding, because truly you can't understand what somebody else is going through if you don't walk a mile in their shoes.
That is very, very true. Well, thank you. We're looking forward to having you present, and that will be a great class, I'm sure. Can you give us a little bit of background or maybe a nugget of what your favorite part of being at a Women in Fire conference might be?
Oh, well, you know this, but I'll tell everybody else. It's definitely the networking and meeting different people. While it's always great to, you know, get some tidbits and nuggets of education, the friendships are forever important to me. You know, you have different people to lean on that have different experiences, different life experiences as well in different departments. You and I, for example, look what a great friendship we have had over the past several years. And we are totally two different people from two totally different organizations. But I mean, you're still, as I always tell you, you're my bestie from the Westie. you know, we complement each other well, and it's something that I couldn't imagine, you know, life without you. So I'm always grateful for.
Well, I am as well. And we're looking forward to having you back again. I know it's been a bit, and it'll be nice to have you reconnect, and we're excited to have you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next up, another one of our Women in Fire board members is Rachel Stibel. And Rachel is our second vice president currently on the Women in Fire board, and she will be teaching Choose to Lead. Some of you may be very familiar with Rachel if you've been to any of her hands-on sessions at our conferences the last few years. She's really elevated that program itself. So Rachel, welcome. And if you could give us a little bit of background on you.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Awesome. Hi, everybody. My name is Rachel. I'm a lieutenant paramedic with the Colorado Springs Fire Department. And as Amy said, second vice president with the organization. I am very excited to be at both FDIC and at our conference in Orlando. I'm looking forward to both of those very much. I am teaching a little bit of a, I guess you call it a leadership class at the old FDIC. Some of you that have been there to that class last year, hopefully enjoyed it. It's just kind of a nice way to sit down and just chat a little bit about what my take is on what leadership means, and from basically from that backseat to the front seat, and how, you know, my career has gone, things that have gone well for me, some things that I've learned over the course of my time that hopefully I can share and save other people some time and heartache on some things, and honestly, just some good insights. So basically just learning from one another, and looking forward to being there.
We're certainly excited to have you. And as you mentioned, we do have our full international conference coming up in Orlando as well. And that will be very exciting. For our one-day leadership conference, are you able to give us a little bit of background, I guess, on what takeaways attendees might have from attending your class?
Yeah, I think so. We base everything at our time with FDIC around leadership, and that's why there is no, we're not involved in much in the hands-on and things like that. Really, it's just a chance to come and learn and talk to one another and then take some classes on leadership, because that's the whole point, is to help those of you that are interested in leadership positions to maybe give you some insights and some direction into how that looks for your future. Those of us that are sitting in leadership positions currently officially, as leaders, to basically just see what others are doing and have a chance to go to these classes and see what others are talking about and become more well-rounded and more, I guess, worldly in your thought process, because sometimes we can silo up in our own departments and we tend to lead like those around us. And if that's a good place to be, that's great. And if it's not, then it's not. And so what I like about our leadership conference is it gives people and members a chance to come interact with other leaders and other aspiring leaders to see what's out there and what's working, what's not. Again, just like everything, find a way to connect and say, oh, that happens to me too. Or, hey, I like the way that you handled that. And it's just a chance to be exposed to other people from around the country in a way that we can build from and learn from and network with.
Thank you. And I think that that's kind of something that you said actually caused me to really think about the fact that, you know, at our leadership conference, we may have those who are aspiring to leadership or those who are in leadership. And I don't think it necessarily even has to be leadership within your own fire service organization. I mean, it's, for instance, you and I are both in leadership positions with the organization. It, you know, there could be some value to people who maybe are taking leadership roles within different areas of their life, whether it be at work or in some other form.
I 100% agree with that. And it's interesting because you and I are a good example of that. In my department, I'm a lieutenant, which is the lowest level of officers there is. But yet within the organization, I have the opportunity to work with you guys and be the second vice president of our organization. And that's a big difference, really, if you look at it on paper. But they have complemented each other very well in the sense that I have an opportunity to do the things I do with Women in Fire and then turn around and apply those to my job and vice versa. And so I think that that's a very important takeaway, is that you're right. There's so many organizations out there in the fire service that in our own organization, like you're a big deal. You're kind of a big deal up there in your organization. And, you know, and yet you can come and speak to gals that are and members that are aspiring lieutenants, because you remember what that felt like. And it was not that long ago. And I think even in the networking, you and I talk about that a lot. And even when we talked with each other, you know, there's people that we've had on the show that are near and dear to me. And I very much learn from them in the positions that they're in and the things that they've learned. And I think that's the kind of the gist of my class, is to pass that on to those that want to come listen to me, stand there and chat with them for an hour or two. And so I think there's huge value in that. And that's part of what I really love about the organization, is that when we get together, I have an opportunity to fill a bigger role as a second vice president, but then I also get a chance to take all the things I learned back to my job and apply them to my position in my department.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that perspective for sure. And I'm sure you'll have a few people that will be excited to listen to what your feedback on leadership is for a little bit, at least. It'll be good. I'm excited. So we have, of course, our conference coming up in Orlando. We just had the opportunity to go and have a site visit and, man, put in a lot of work in just a couple of days to prep for that. What are you most looking forward to there?
I always look forward to just us being together. That is, and I think we all think the same thing. We truly are an organization of people and women that just adore each other. And that feels so good, because it's just this group of, you know, warriors against, you know, all the things we want to see and change about the fire service. And so I love that camaraderie. So I'm looking the most forward to seeing everybody, all the faces that I don't get to catch up with unless it's a conference. And then I'm looking forward, like I always do, to the hands-on training, because I just love putting the gear on and getting out there and swinging the tools and having fun and watching. For me, it's always been about watching the gals come and learn something and seeing that, because people learn things in leadership classes all day long, and we offer so many good classes that you learn from, but you don't always get to see that applied right then and there. And what I love about the hands-on stuff is I can stand out there and watch someone come, not be sure of themselves with their skills, and leave at the end of the day having done that 6 or 7 more times and just been stoked about how much they improved. And I think that will always be second to the networking for me, and seeing my friends is getting to see the gals and that are doing the work on the fire scenes, getting to be confident in their skills, because we all know that breeds leadership later on. Those are the ones that are going to move forward and be captains and lieutenants and chiefs in their departments. And so for me, it's that tangible watching the skills improve and watching that confidence get built, because that is the basis of leadership right there. So that those are the two things, getting to have a drink with all my friends and then getting to watch the hands-on training and the confidence that it builds.
Yeah, I have to say I had some maybe extended opportunity in Spokane just to be out and to get to witness and really feel that atmosphere this last year. And I just really appreciated that. And it's funny, I feel like there are so many times the last several years, especially after you've gotten involved with this piece of the conference work, that I've seen a firefighter struggle or have, you know, maybe a confidence issue within a skill or a task on the fire ground. And it just makes me instantly want to be able to put them into that scenario and get some of that training. I just think it's so valuable.
I agree. And I'm really looking forward to, this is the conference where our functional trustee, Nikki Yancey, gets a chance to come in and she's basically going to kind of take that torch from me at this conference. And so we're going to be out there together, and she is as passionate and as good at everything as I ever hope to be. And so it'll be fun to have her out there with us. And, you know, she's the same way as you and I are with this whole thing of, you know, we want to build that confidence. And that's one of the coolest things to us, is to get to see that training take place. And because we know how special it is to train in that environment, just like it is to do classroom stuff. I mean, they are so equally as great. It's just different in how they play out. But Nikki's just as excited and enthusiastic. And so it's really nice to be able to hand that off to someone who has the same passion that you and I did for it when it was our turn to shoot to do those things. And so we're looking forward to having her out there and her to run the show. It'll be hard to tell us apart when we're out there, because we're basically, we look the same, but yeah, I'm excited for it. And I think that's just any chance we can to provide that environment, because it's so unique and so special. And I think it's one of the things that makes us who we are, is the fact that we can provide that in that training environment in a nice, safe place for these members to come just gain that confidence and then be tomorrow's leaders because they're so confident in what they're doing.
Well, and I appreciate too that you recognize the importance in the succession planning of having someone able to you know, train and glean. And obviously Nikki is very qualified, and you know, there's a reason that she was able to earn that position. But I think it's important, kind of going back to leadership a little bit, it's important as well to recognize that in order for there to be growth, that there has to be change. And it's important to make sure that we're training up the next leader.
I agree. And I think too, that's, you know, that's a great example of, you know, it wasn't an easy thing to think about, because I do love it so much. But it is so nice to see someone come into that role that loves it as much as I do. And honestly, part of that too, on my end, is just learning that is part of the leadership. And that's an example of, I wouldn't have gotten that in the role in my department, because I'm not in a place where I'm wanting to step up and do a captain's test quite yet, because I'm enjoying what I'm doing. But with this organization, it's nice, because that kind of puts that in front of me and goes, hey, if these are the things you want to do, and that's just how succession works. And honestly, to put myself in a position to be polished by, you know, you and Tony and in those things. And that's the side of it that I got to experience, is going, hey, I love doing that, but in order to grow and to move on and to create an organization we all love, that has to happen. And so I think that's a good example of things I wouldn't have gotten in my department that I get as being fortunate enough to be part of this organization. And I think that speaks hopefully to those out there listening that want to be involved at a state rep position, as a member who wants to get into a trustee position, is that you have an opportunity to kind of hit the fast lane and learn and grow in a way that you may not in your own department. And so that's a great example of it. You know, I initially didn't want to let it go, because I love it so much, but I love the fact that I can turn around and develop somebody, and then I can turn around and be developed by others. And I think that's a really good piece of what we do as an organization.
So, you know, obviously you've mentioned that there'll be someone else kind of taking on that realm, or that helm, I should say, for the next conference that we have, which would be 2 years out. So we'd be looking forward to that in 2024. If you had to give some feedback to organizations who are interested in hosting a conference, the international conference, in how they should be prepared, at least for the training ground aspect of things, what would your primary points be?
You know, the things that make us happy and the things that make us want to go to organizations is if you have a place that we can host all the different hands-on trainings, when we can have AutoX and the nozzle forward and all of the things that happen within a fire tower. If you have the kind of facilities that allow as much as possible to happen on site, that makes me so happy, because then I can manage everything, or I'm sorry, Nikki can manage everything from a position of,
one place. So logistics obviously make us happy if there's a, if you have a big enough training facility to do all those things. And honestly, the places we go where the local departments have the most buy-in makes us very happy, because really we can make anything work if we have the right people in place and we have the right amount of passion meeting our passion. So training grounds are a huge deal for us. And a big thing for me is do you have a place where I can put our members to train in a place where, you know, I don't have to worry about getting them contaminated with, you know, the carcinogens and the things that cause cancer. And, you know, I don't want to ever send our members home, and none of us in the organization do, dirtier than they came, right? We don't want to have to send our members home with things that we wouldn't want them wearing their gear dirty. So a nice training ground is always a plus, but even if it's not the best in the country, but you have a staff and a group of people that are committed to us and to making this conference a great thing and have that passion, we can overcome anything when I have a strong group of people on the ground that want to help and want to get involved and want to do those things. So honestly, just a good group of people there that want to see us succeed and want to see us come in and have a great time and train as many people as we can.
Thank you. I think that's some great feedback. And I know that it's kind of fun because as we ramp up for another conference, we tend to have a lot of organizations reach out and just inquire about what it is that they would need to do. So I think that's some good feedback. I think you're right, though. I think that the support really does make a big difference.
Yeah, I liken it a lot to an island. Like, we can show up, but if you don't have it, we're not going to find it. Like, I know a lot of places want us to come out there and they think by us showing up, it's going to bring their people in, but we need to have people in on board first, right? You know, and then have that support. And then it just gets even better from there.
Yep, for sure. Well, definitely looking forward to seeing you here in just a very short time in Indianapolis. Will you be staying around for a couple days beyond the conference, beyond our leadership conference, I should say?
Yeah, I'm in a kind of a weird spot. I just started a staff position, which is new for me because it is weird to not be on a rig. I'm loving it. It's great. I love helping the organization in a different way. So I'll be out there Sunday in time for Dean and I to have fun on the Sunday night social, as we always do.
Great.
And then I'll be at class Monday, and then I'm sticking around until I don't think I leave out of there until Tuesday evening, maybe. So not as long as I'd love, but because of the time constraints, at least I'm able to get out there and be out there as much as I can. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody.
Good. Well, if you will be at FDIC or at our one-day leadership conference, definitely make sure that you connect with Rachel that day or Sunday night at our event. And we'll look forward to seeing you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I am thrilled to have our next guest joining us. And I know that many of you will be as well, especially if you're able to join for the conference. Dr. Sarah Jahnke is the director and a senior scientist for the Center for Fire, Rescue, and EMS Health Research at the National Development and Research Institutes here in the USA. And there's current work being done by scientists nationally to start shedding light on how firefighting affects females in ways similar to and different from male firefighters. The awesome part about this keynote is that it will outline recent and emerging topics such as reproductive health, behavioral health, and modifiable risk factors among this population, both what we know today and also what we need to glean from in the future. Sarah, thank you for joining. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So can you give us a little bit of background on what our attendees can expect if they're able to join and listen in?
Sure. Lots of data and lots of conversation about what data is next. So it's a really amazing time in firefighter health research where just so much work is going on. I mean, 2/3 of the work and publications on firefighter health have been in the last decade, basically since the Assistance to Firefighter grants started funding through R&D. There's been a lag on the health of women in the fire service and research in that area, but we're catching up as fast as we can, really. And there's some great stuff. So we've done some work, and Women in Fire has been amazing at helping us get that stuff out and getting people enrolled in the survey and those types of things. But it's really highlighting some risks that I think we knew kind of were out there from some of the data in the 90s, but hasn't really been fleshed out. So looking at like reproductive health, rates of miscarriage, preterm labor, we've got some stuff coming out on safety of breast milk, those types of things. So I think it's awesome that we have all this research looking at behavioral health, looking at the impact of discrimination and harassment on women, and then also looking at departments that are really successful in creating inclusive environments and benefit of that. So all those awesome pieces, and then looking at like what's ahead, what's next, because in some ways this is kind of still in its infancy, but it's blowing up. Everyone's interested in this topic now that we've started to get some of the data in, and it's really fascinating stuff. So I'm going to like totally nerd out on health research.
I love it.
In a good way, with some fun stories.
Yes. So,
yeah.
No, that's awesome. We're really excited. And I think that's something that I've noticed a lot of are those who kind of stay engaged with the organization have been excited about recently, is just all of the research that is coming out and is now available, and just having those resources and being able to make educated decisions.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, for a lot of people ask like, well, what's the policy implication of this? What is this? And I like, to me, I think the most important thing is that we have the information and that we arm women and departments with, hey, here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. Now make, like you said, an informed decision, because what is a good decision for you might not be one that I need, but we need to, you know, we need to know. And I think that's, I think it's the same conversation we have around anything with cancer and those types of things. Like here, there are going to be exposures, but what do you do about it? And how do you protect your health? What do we not know about health implications for offspring? Those types of things. But on the other hand, like these aren't specific to women. Even like we're starting to look at, based on the research on what we know about women and the reproductive impact of the job, we're starting to go, okay, whoa, wait a minute. We see this in women, like men have reproductive systems too. So what do we do with that there? So I don't want to say that we're only talking about, you know, ovaries and the uterus. We're going to start talking about things like sperm and reproductive health and fertility issues in men, and the health of children, of, you know, offspring of men and fishes. I don't know. Like those are all questions that remain to be answered, but it does have implications. Even if you don't have a uterus, I think a lot of these implications on a wider scale. And the other thing, you know, when we've looked at the health of women in the fire service, they tend to be like rates of, I don't want to spoil my own thunder, but rates of things like obesity in the fire service and low fitness are considerably lower than men, considerably lower than general population. So women have been able to overcome those, the things about the fire service that pull for unhealthy, and they have been able to overcome those and really flourish. So I think there's some awesome lessons learned on how does that happen? How do we have such positive health aspects?
Right.
And what do we need to learn from that, basically?
Oh, that's awesome. I think something you kind of mentioned earlier kind of piqued my interest a bit. And you and I have talked about it a little bit before. The fact that this research is so relatively new, as far as, you know, you mentioned maybe the last decade, why do you think that there was either a lack of research before or maybe a lack of recognition of the need?
Mm-hmm. So I do think when I first started doing firefighter health research, one of my mentors said, he goes, you know, when we look at firefighter health research, it was Dr. Gist from Kansas City Fire Department. He goes, we're not like even starting with low hanging fruit. We're picking up the rotting fruit on the ground. Like there's so much foundation that needs to be built. Yeah. And so we started with, and really like across the board, people started with some really basic, easy questions and with basic, easy populations. And it's, I don't think any shock that if you go into a fire department and do a department level survey, you know, you're 92% white males.
Right.
So really easy to get that. And when we started publishing, you know, we published like our first project was on cardiovascular risk factors. And so we would publish like, here's what we know about the health. And we would stratify, because you have to stratify those things by gender, because that has an impact. And the editors of the journals would say, you know, unless there's a large enough sample of women, just take them out. And because we can't do a statistical comparison. So what you ended up with was a really great and emerging literature on the health of white males in the fire service.
Right.
Great starting point.
Yeah.
But we really had to, it took us, I think, 4 or 5 submissions to get one. We pulled all the data from 2 studies on the health of women that we collected and where we had like common risk factors across the 2 studies. But that was 2 huge million-dollar studies. And we had like 68 women, I think, in a sample. So it was good foundational. But then that was the point that we're like, all right, we can't just go department to department, collect 2 women at a time and publish anything. Like it's not right to anything. So then that's why we started designing, and our group has done it, but Jeff Burgess has a project on the health of women, Alberto Cabana Martinez from Miami, like people are really looking at now, how can we specifically design studies? So those are not, you know, we don't go department to department, we're doing like broader sampling, working with Women in Fire, working with other groups to say the union's been awesome about blasting out, you know, what information can we get specific to women and really build it that way. So, but now, you know, now everyone's jumping on board with like, oh my God, there's so many, like we're starting with foundation a decade ago with men. Now we're like, oh my God, we have to build a whole new foundation on women because we're seeing so many, some similarities and some differences. And then it's really like then compounding and building on top of building for the next questions for men. So it's just so cool. It's such an exciting time to be in this area and doing research.
I love it. I love that, like you said, so many people are giving attention to it. And you're right. I mean, it really is for the fire service as a whole. It's very inclusive in that, you know, we all need some information about how the job impacts our life and our families' lives. And I'm just so appreciative that so many researchers are taking that as seriously as they are and really diving into some of the deeper dives rather than just the low lying or rotten fruit as you kind of later
on. What's also cool, because I think that a lot of the work that we've started to do with women has highlighted that, you know, we assume because the majority of the fire service is white male, that all white males are the same. Mm-hmm. Some of the qualitative work we did early on, women would talk about, you know, we'd be doing something and I'd say, hey, can I carry it this way? Cause it, you know, this is easier for me. Ultimately, it ended up being safer. And so many women said that after that experience, smaller stature men would come up and be like, can you teach me how you did that?
Yeah.
And I think to assume that all of the fire service is a 210-pound, 6'2" white male,
right,
done that, it has not been beneficial for the fire service. Yeah. I think because you have a, you know, white male who's 250 pounds and you have a white male that's 160 and 5'3". I'm sure 160 and 5'3", but you know what I mean? I think what's been cool about it and pioneering looking at the health of women is realizing like an inclusive fire service doesn't just mean we can not be shitty to women. It means we can accept people just for who they are, like when they walk in the door. And it's okay if you're not 6'2", 210, right, white male. So it's cool. I think it's pushing the fire service to be better.
I would agree. Yeah, certainly.
At least that's my hope.
I think so. I mean, I certainly have heard that from men in the fire service of being thankful either for better fitting gear because of the push for that for females, or for maybe engine design being better laid out, you know, because maybe they aren't, like you said, there are plenty of men who are not necessarily terribly tall or of that kind of traditional size that we would envision. So
yeah, benefit projects all around.
Awesome. Well, we're definitely looking forward to having you and thank you for joining. We're excited to have a little bit of time with you there in Indy.
Oh, we're going to have so much fun.
Will you be sticking around for the week or are you just there for a couple days?
I'm around all week. I ended up getting speaking the early on Monday and then late on Thursday. So I'll be around. I'll be hanging out.
Perfect.
And, you know, find me at the coffee shop in the morning and the bar in the evening and we'll have a good time.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to it. And thank you for joining tonight and we'll see you soon.
Great. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Friends, thank you for joining another episode of Fire Engineering Blog Talk with Women in Fire. We're looking forward to seeing you April 25th at our one-day leadership conference co-located with FDIC. And if we don't get to see you there, hopefully we'll get to see you around for the full week. Have a great night.